In our studies of the men and women of faith in Hebrews 11, we come this evening to the great story of the faith of those who marched round the walls of Jericho. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after 7 days, says Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 30. And that simple sentence contains a whole world of evangelical truth, and it's a verse that is full of hope and of Christian encouragement. By faith, the walls fell down after 7 days. But the real story of Jericho starts before this. It starts with the promise of God that nothing and no one could stand before the onward march of the work of God. The land was theirs. It was theirs by divine decree. God had given the Hebrews the land. It was their possession. And all they had to do was go in and possess what God had already given them. You find this promise in the early chapter of Joshua, chapter 1, and at verse 2, where God speaks to Joshua, and he says, chapter 1 and verse 2, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land which I am giving to them, to the people of Israel." These words, "Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, as I promised to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the land of the Hittites, to the great sea, the Mediterranean, towards the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land which I swore to their fathers. Only be strong and very courageous." And that was the promise of God. God had spoken. So they crossed the Jordan with the promise. And when the Jordan was crossed, they found themselves face to face with Jericho. I think the lesson this evening lies in two things and two sets of reality. First of all, there was the visible, something they could see in front of them with their own eyes. And then beyond that, beyond the walls, there was an invisible world that they couldn't see. And the test was to set the promise of God against what they could see and what they couldn't see. Let's take these in turn. Well, what met their eyes was threefold. First of all, of course, the walls of Jericho, which, according to the archaeologists, were 30 feet high. And that must have terrified them and daunted them, because the Hebrews had never seen walls before. You see, their fathers, who had lived in Egypt, had seen walls and walled cities. They had seen the grand architecture of the pharaohs and the great treasure cities of Python and Ramses and the stupendous temples that the Egyptians built for the worship of their idols. But their forefathers, who had seen walled cities, had all died in the wilderness because of their unbelief. And the children had grown up in the wilderness for 40 years. And they'd never seen anything like this. There are no walled cities in the desert. And in fact, the situation was even worse than met the eye, because Jericho had two rings of walls. There was a wall inside a wall with a gap between them. And people built houses over the gap between the walls. You see, Jericho had a housing problem. It was such a wealthy, prosperous, fertile place that people poured into it. And the city simply could not accommodate the people who were pouring in, just as the cities of our land couldn't accommodate the people pouring into them in the days of the Industrial Revolution. And so the people started building houses over the gap between the walls. That was where Rahab the harlot lived. And that was why she was able to drop down her thread of scarlet, because she was living on the walls. She couldn't find a house in the town. She was living on the walls. Let me just read you these words from a book by Merrill Unger, who is one of the great evangelical American archaeologists. A massive 6-foot-thick wall was erected on the edge of the Mound of Jericho. The inner wall was separated from it by a space of from 12 to 15 feet, and the inner wall was itself 12 feet thick. Can you imagine that? A 6-foot-thick outer wall, then a 12-foot space with houses above it, and then a 12-foot-thick inner wall. The size of the actual city was small, comprising only about half a dozen acres, but the crowded conditions led to the erection of houses over the space between the inner and outer walls. And thus Rahab is said to have let the spies down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the side of the wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. Let me ask you, have you ever, as a Christian, found yourself confronted by walls? Blank, unyielding, unsurrendered, dead-end walls. And it seems as if you've reached a cul-de-sac. You are standing there with the promise of God, and there's a wall in front of you. The second thing that met their eyes was antiquity. And that was something that the Hebrews did not have. It's a matter of scientific fact. that Jericho is one of the most ancient inhabited settlements in the entire world. No matter how far the archaeologists have dug back, they have come across evidences of human habitation on the site. In fact, they have dug back to 8,000 years before Christ, and they have found human remains. City upon city, layer upon layer, culture upon culture. And the city whose walls fell down was the fourth city to be built on the site. And so they were confronted with a civilization 6,000 years old. And the Hebrews were 40 years old. They had been constituted a nation under God at Mount Sinai 40 years before this, when the 12 broken clans that came out of Egypt were welded by God into a nation, a theocracy, a nation under God. They were 40 years old, and they were staring at an antiquity of 6,000 years. There they were, excuse me, as green as cabbages, facing that antiquity. Now, can I ask you, have you ever as a Christian felt inferior, helpless, not quite up to the challenges that confront you? And the third thing that met their eyes, well, was of course, because of the antiquity, was a civilization such as they had never known. There is no civilization in the sands of the desert. Archaeologists tell us that Jericho is a précis. It is a summary of all pre-Christian history going back to 7,000 years before the birth of Christ. Jericho is like an accordion squashed together. It is condensed civilization. The whole of pre-Christian history is condensed into Jericho. And there was this ragged band who'd known nothing but sand for 40 years, confronted by civilization. In fact, civilization never really left Jericho. Later on, you know, Cleopatra, the gypsy that she was, cast her covetous eyes on Jericho and coveted its wealth and prosperity for herself. She wanted the city of palms to be part of her empire, and she begged her lover, Mark Antony, to let her have Jericho. And since he was a bit soft in the head, he let her have Jericho. And then, if you please, once she'd got hold of all the palm trees and the balsam groves, she rented it out to Herod the Great for a bit of cash. She was a lady, wasn't she? And a much more important person than Herod the Great came to this civilization. One day Jesus walked through Jericho, and he opened the blind eyes of Bartimaeus, and he called Zacchaeus down from the sycamore tree in Jericho. Why was Zacchaeus living in Jericho? Because he was a well-to-do, well-heeled tax collector, and he lived in Jericho because the pickings were good. It was a great city. Why is the story of the Good Samaritan set on the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Jericho? It's because the road was traveled by wealthy merchants bound for this plush, prosperous, civilized city. And that was why the road to Jericho was plagued by brigands who waylaid the hapless and the unprotected. Can I read you a paragraph from George Adam Smith's marvelous book, The Historical Geography of the Holy Land? George Adam Smith, one of the leading ministers of the Free Church towards the end of last century, and minister of Queen's Cross Free Church in Aberdeen. Listen to this great description of Jericho. You will see a city rise in the midst of a wonderful fertility of grove and garden. Jericho was the gateway to a province. It was the emporium, supermarket, of a large trade. She was the mistress of a palm forest and woods of balsam and rich gardens. To earliest Israel, she was the city of palms. And that's how she's described in the book of Deuteronomy. To the Jewish historian Josephus, she was a divine region, the fattest of Judea. Greeks and Romans spread her fame with her dates and her balsam all over the world, and great revenue was derived from her. Pliny, the Roman writer, said, the best dates in the world come from Jericho. And doctors in the ancient world went to Jericho for their balsam to make ointments and medicines. Jericho's year is one long summer. She can soak herself in water, and the chemicals with which her soil is charged seem to favor her products. And yet in war, Jericho has always been easily taken. That her walls fell at the sound of Joshua's trumpets is a summary of her history. Judah could never keep her. She fell to northern Israel until northern Israel perished. She fell without a blow to Pompey, and at the approach of Herod and of Vespasian, her people deserted her. So these words. No great man was born in Jericho. There was something soft, flaccid, weak, decadent. No great man was born in Jericho, and no heroic deed was done in her. She has been called the key and the guardhouse of Judea. And this is typical George Adam Smith. She has been called the key and the guardhouse of Judea. She was only the pantry. Jericho never stood a siege, and her inhabitants were always running away. Now, can you imagine how the Hebrews felt and how of little consequence they felt and how impotent they felt before this great city? Have you ever felt like that as a Christian in today's world, confronted by the might and the godlessness of 20th century paganism? Its walls and its antiquity and its civilization. And behind all that, there was an invisible world. And once again, there are three features in this invisible world behind the walls. First of all, there was the reality of idolatry. You see, the name Jericho has a meaning, and it means the city of the moon god. And so this rich, affluent place was a place where men and women worshipped the sun and the moon and the stars, and where they said their prayers to creation rather than to the Creator, who is God over all, blessed forever. Jericho was a city of idolatry, and there was no excuse for her idolatry, because only a few miles up the road, Melchizedek, the priest of the Most High God, ministered in Jerusalem and bore witness to the true and the living God, surrounded by the darkness of heathendom. Jericho was a place of idolatry. Secondly, Jericho was a place of decadence, because all idolatry destroys. Whether it's the idolatrous worship of the stars and the planets in heaven, or whether it's the more cultured idolatry, such as the worship of music and of learning and of scholarship and of wisdom, or whether it's the more ordinary idolatries, such as sport or the cult of the body, which is the big thing now, the worship of the human body, or whether it is hedonism, which is the worship of pleasure, the worship of good times. It is the teaching of Scripture that all idolatry leads to decadence, and all decadence destroys. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Jesus is the only safeguard. He won't destroy you. Or whether it's the most dangerous kind of idolatry of all, and that is the worship of religion. Its proper name is ecclesiolatry, the worship of the kirk. Churchianity, religiosity, dead, useless religiosity. All idolatry leads to decadence, and all decadence destroys. And the third invisible reality was the curse of God. Towards the end of Joshua chapter 6, verse 26, we read these words, Joshua laid an oath upon them at that time, saying, Cursed before the Lord be the man that rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest son shall he set up its gates. And in fact, the gates of Jericho were not built again for 600 years until about 860 before Christ, when an impertinent unbeliever called Hiel the Bethelite decided to rebuild the walls of Jericho in the days of Ahab. Turn to it in 1 Kings. Here's a man defying the curse of God. 1 Kings chapter 16. And of course, it would be the days of Ahab, wouldn't it? 1 Kings 16. In the 38th year of Asa, the king of Judah in the south, Ahab, the son of Omri, began to reign over Israel in the north. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel and Samaria for 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all that were before him. And as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he took for a wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, the king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. He erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. And Ahab made an Asherah. That's a female god, a kind of goddess statue. Ahab made an Asherah. And Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than all the kings of Israel who were before him. That's saying something. In his days, Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. He defied God's curse. He laid its foundation at the cost of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub. And the feeling amongst the archaeologists is that Hiel of Bethel, in fact, killed his son and put the bones into the foundations of the gate and the walls. According to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. Idolatry, decadence, and the curse of God. I wonder if that's ringing any bells with you. Because that is what is confronting Christians today. Walls, impregnable walls, defying the gospel of Christ. The antiquity of evil, ancient, entrenched evil. A blasé culture and a rotten civilization. Idolatries by the million, stars of this and stars of that. The adored ones with the feet of clay. The decadence of seedy lives and seedy morals. And the curse of God and the feeling over Western civilization that God is no longer there. I wonder if, as a Christian, you've ever felt yourself confronted by all of that and threatened by this bastion of godlessness. What brought the walls down? It was faith. Naked faith. Nothing more and nothing less. The people marched round the city in silence for 6 days. And they believed there wasn't an earthquake, there wasn't a tremor, there were no vibrations. 6 days of silence. Walls came down. Why do you think there is in China today a vibrant Christian church? It's because of the Marxist Cultural Revolution. You remember that time of madness in the 50s and the 60s? It was a time of madness and destruction when all evidences of Western civilization and culture were to be removed from China. China had to be purged, and even priceless artifacts from old China, exquisite pottery and vases and paintings and rugs, they were ruined forever by the Red Guards. The Christians were hounded from pillar to post, particularly in the remote villages of China in the north and the northeast. Vans would arrive unannounced in the early morning at the villages, and the Red Guards would start their work weeding out the believers, burning the churches, having bonfires, hymn books and Bibles. And there were the Christians with the promise of God and the walls of Jericho. But the walls fell down, and it was faith that brought them down. And that's why what seemed to be the end of the church under the Red Guards and the Cultural Revolution was in fact the beginning of the church. Or take the Soviet Union. Why do you think there's a vibrant church in the Soviet Union today? We've nothing to equal it in the West. Soviet Christians coming to this country come to our churches and say, "Where are your people? Where on earth are your Christians?" You see, Marxism holds it to be self-evident that there is no God. Marx taught that God and the church were invented by rich people to crush the poor. They were simply tools in order to keep the masses down. And while they kept the masses down and got them to work harder, they promised them better times in another world. There is a happy land far, far away. And in the first edition of the church hymnary, this blasphemous hymn: "The rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate, God made them high and lowly and ordered their estate. And because God and the church were tools to crush the hapless, Marx said they had to go. And so from 1917 onwards, Christians were systematically persecuted, pressurized, imprisoned, tortured, and vast numbers of ministers, oh, numberless numbers of ministers, priests, and ordinary believers simply vanished. The 1930s was the time when the Gulag archipelago was in full swing, like the concentration camps of the war. Then the war came, and Stalin needed help even from the Christians, and he got the Orthodox Church in Russia to raise money for a squadron of tanks to fight the Nazis. And there was such a squadron on the front, the Russian front, during the war. And the money was provided by the Christians. And Stalin was glad of the Christians. And so during the war, the persecution eased off. Then the war ended and it started again. It was continued by Khrushchev, who's normally thought of as a mild man. He was a monster. It was the days of the rockets. And he said the rockets were going to go up into the sky to sweep God off his throne, if there was a God on a throne. Now are the Christians with the promise of God, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Only be strong and of a good courage. The promise of God and the walls of Jericho. And the walls came down. And it was faith that brought them down. Are there walls in your life tonight? In your family, in your personal life, your private life, or are you concerned about the walls in our poor nation? Think of the growth of the powers of evil in our day, the growth of the satanic and the demonic, and this preoccupation with the occult. Think of the degradation of human life. There's our walls of Jericho for you. The degradation of women. The degradation of the weak and the elderly, the vulnerable. The degradation of little children. Walls of Jericho, my friend. What do you think is going to come into your living room when we have umpteen television stations beaming their produce across the skies? You can be sure that very little of it will have to do with godliness or moral standards. You'll be treated to an infinite series of rubbishy, trashy shows and questionable films. These are the walls. You got the promise of God. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will be with you. Only be strong and of a good courage. After 7 days, the walls fell down, and it was faith that brought them down. Have you the faith to see that? Have you the courage to claim it? hope so. Amen. May God bless the preaching of his word.